and welcome to episode 28 of Black Hole Cinema. I'm your host of this evening, Emma Platt, and joining me tonight are Leslie Pitt.
Hello.
And Chris Byrne.
Hello.
And this week, we're going to be talking about some of the films that we didn't get to cover last week, because obviously we had the quiz. We'll be talking about...
Which
we friggin' slaughtered them.
Well, you did, really.
I couldn't have done it without your help.
You pretty much did, but I...
We're going to be talking about the remake of Poltergeist and the George Clooney Disney kind of summer blockbuster, I guess, Tomorrowland. And then moving on to Simon Pegg's new rom-com, Man Up, and Dwayne Johnson's San Andreas. So to start off with, we're going to be talking about Poltergeist.
I think there's a storm coming.
Stop being such a baby, Griffin.
Poltergeist is a remake of the 1980 film of the same name. Originally, I believe it was produced by Steven Spielberg, the original.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I think it was a 12 as well, or a PG, the original.
It was one of the things, thinking in the States it was a PG, but over here it was a 15. It was kind of like that time where like a 12 didn't exist. So
oh, yeah.
There was a bit of a bit discrepancy, there was a bit of a drop. So... So it's like, you know, like, that's why, like, in like, things like Spielberg, they like Indiana Jones and things like that, people, like, these PG films, are people like, that's a little bit hard, that those faces melting off, that kind of thing, for be a kid's film. So, but yeah, it was one of those type of films. But this one is a 15 now, which I'm not even sure why. But...
No, it's not, because I was thinking about this before. I mean, it's not particularly scary, it's not gruesome or anything.
What's the original?
Yeah, the original. I mean, I didn't find the remake really scary either, but you can definitely tell how they've tried to make it darker, you know, make it more sinister. It's your typical, the remake doesn't stray too much from the original. It's your typical haunted house. Family move into a new house, strange things start to happen. They've got a cute little daughter who gets sucked into the TV, essentially, and it turns out the house is buried on... It's built on an old Indian burial ground in the original, and then this one, it's just an old cemetery. With a lot of horror remakes, it's just remaking it for the sake of money. It's not to add anything new. I mean, it's not like... If you talk about the horror remakes, which I rate, and I don't know about you two, but talk about The Fly, The Thing...
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the Dawn of the Dead remake and the Evil Dead remake, which don't stray too much from the original, but they kind of add something new in. Like with the Dawn of the Dead remake, you had you running zombies and that kind of thing. There's nothing particular about it that stands out. It's really, I don't know, it kind of reminds me in some ways of Insidious. I think it's kind of taken its cues from that and Paranormal Activity, where in tone.
I agree with you. I mean, it does go in the sort of same, it does the same trapping of horror remake B kind of thing. It just feels like, but we've seen it all before. It feels like, we want to sort of take our cues from the original, but we've but we've seen the original and it's more effective with the original. Can you give us something new? I mean, there were certain things in it I thought it was... I thought it was better than I thought it was, but I was going in with low expectations. It was heightened mainly by the actors, particularly, you know, Sam Rockwell's always good. And
yeah.
He added, some sort of, oh, I like Sam Rockwell, and he added, a nice sort of personality too. All the other actors were actually quite decent, but there was no scares whatsoever. It just felt very... plain and just very it was one of the worst things I can say about it. It just felt like it was it's all right.
Yeah, it's very flat. Kind of how I thought about it. I've talked about the horror films a couple of times on the podcast because I do enjoy horror films. I did my bachelor's dissertation on horror films. My master's dissertation is going to be on horror films, so I do enjoy them. But they're so cheap to make. They're always going to make the money back. I mean, out of all the horror films I've looked at,
they've got a hardcore fan base. I mean, that's the thing with the remakes as well.
Yeah, I mean, when I worked in the cinema, any horror film, no matter how crappy it was always going to be sold out on a Friday and Saturday night, no matter what. And like I said, they always make money, and it's just easy. And I understand where the studios are coming from to an extent, because you don't want to pour your money into something original which might not work, but they'd rather spend it on something that's already been done that they know they're going to get the investment back on.
It's the name, isn't it? It's more of a marketing ploy. That's why these remakes get remade. It's like, it's not really thinking about, like, oh, well, remakes are doing really well. It's just like, well, we can stir up publicity to get people bumped on the seat. So it's like a brand, if you will. That's why we keep seeing remakes. It's like, oh, it's the Nightmare on Elm Street remake.
Yeah.
It goes, oh, remember those? And it stirs up. Even if it's like, even if you like, dare I say, remake something like The Exorcist or The Shining or whatever. I was going to say Halloween, but that's already happened. Fuck.
Even like... Like Jaws, but I expect them to remake Jaws with a big CGI.
Oh yeah, Jaws would be like the ultimate. I think I think just the sheer fact of like how much of a stir it'll cause would be like marketing gold. That would be like, even if it turns out to be absolute pap and like it's in the people only go to see it for like 1 week. That's like to the studios, that'll be worth just doing that. You know what I mean? So,
and I mean, I think horror and comedy are probably the two hardest things to get right, because not everyone finds the same thing funny, and not everyone finds the same thing scary. Mm. So you're not going to get something that universally appeals to everyone. But like you said, it's more just about the brand now, especially I think with like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre films. When I was growing up, and when I very first started getting into horror films and like reading about them, I remember reading about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like it was banned and it's a horrible film. And like The Exorcist, it's evil and all this kind of hype. And that's what you remember. And
there was a certain sort of like the sheer fact of thinking about watching it was scary enough.
Yeah. Well, my mum is Catholic. She's very deeply Catholic, and she told me she went to see The Exorcist like 4 times, and she couldn't get through it. And she slept with the Bible under her bed and things like that. And she said there was actually nuns outside the cinema blessing people on the way in. And part of me now thinks, was that a marketing stunt by someone, or was it actually just this whole like hype around? And my mum, even now to this day, will not let me have... I'm not allowed to buy The Exorcist on Blu-ray and bring it into the house. She will not let me. It's an evil film to her. And when I eventually watched it, when I was younger, I was like, this is going to be really scary. And I didn't find it really scary, but I appreciate it on a different level. You know, I do enjoy it, and it's one of my favourite horror films.
It makes me laugh when they have that reaction. I mean, I think it's kudos to William Friedkin, but the thing about The Exorcist, I've just... point out the fact that we're actually off for talking about other films rather than the Poltergeist remake now. I think that's
just showing the quality of the film there.
Yeah, well, it's just like, yeah, whatever. But the thing about The Exorcist is actually it's pro-religion, it's pro-faith. Yeah. It's actually, you know, you think that priests and nuns or religious types would kind of get behind it, because it's a film where the priests are the good guys.
Yeah,
it's like it's literally as black and white as that. I mean, yes, there's tons of other stuff thrown in it, but that is the black and whiteness. It is good versus evil. It's, you know, it's about faith. It's about all these things, and it's, you know, I think it's one of the best horror films ever made. But so it makes me laugh when they kind of go, oh, it's evil, because I think it's down to the effect of the time, and the shock value, how good of actual film it was. I mean, well, probably at time now, our senses are kind of... we've seen it all now, so it's not going to have that effect ever again. But
going back to Poltergeist... that was my fault. I went off topic then. It's like you said, I think what really elevates this a little bit is the acting. Like you said, I was like, is that Sam Rockwell? Like, I couldn't believe that Sam Rockwell was in a remake of Poltergeist. But I had really low expectations for it.
And the director of Monster House, which I mean, I've not seen Monster House, but I hear good things. But you think of like kind of a kiddie horror sort of centric sort of director would be like, oh, this should be kind of interesting. But it just felt very much. I mean, I could see that they did try to make it a different film, which is one of my things for if you're going to remake something, then take the general premise and just make a different film from that. The shift of things, like, really the main character is the son.
Yeah.
And it's about him, like, overcoming his fear, which I kind of thought, okay, well, I could see that. You've done something different. But it just wasn't effective enough, wasn't scary enough. Like, there were certain things that just felt like with the clown.
Yeah,
and the lights and the portals and things like that. It just felt very like, okay, well, I see you've updated certain things, but...
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's, like you said about the clowns, like the clown doll is probably the thing I remember most from the original, besides the whole they're here thing, you know.
Nothing. They had to have, like, the girl say, they're here. And yeah. It just felt like, oh, well, there it is. Yeah. Why?
That's me take a pay for, you know what I mean? I thought that, like, the clown as well, do you know, on the poster... It's like they took a demon clown doll directly from hell, and it's so not subtle. It's like, this is an evil clown, this is an evil doll, it's possessed.
It's like no one
its
in
evil
the right
face.
Mind would get that clown.
No, but I mean, clowns are freaking terrifying anyway, really, aren't they? I mean, put a clown in anything, and I'm like, that's evil, it's definitely evil. it's okay. It's just average, but I kind
yeah.
of,
I mean,
like,
you can
I feel like
they've
it. Just. Yeah, I think feel like they set out to just make an okay film. You know, you get for some money, you pay the bills, and that's it. And fair enough, but I want, you know, start doing something innovative with the genre. The genre is, to me, it just seems like the genre is really suffering lately. And I want, like, It Follows, I haven't seen that yet, but that was different. And The Babadook, I really enjoyed that. So that's what I want, someone to do something like that.
I think the problem with a lot of horror films is once a trend gets established, people follow the trend so much. I mean, I have not seen Poltergeist as of yet, but the fact that they, like you guys have said, have used the clown so much in the marketing, so much in the actual film itself, and it looks very much looking like something out of The Conjuring or Annabelle. It just kind of annoys me because you kind of know what kind of film you're in for. And I think one of the reasons why The Babadook and It Follows were so interesting in terms of my tastes was because they completely bucked a trend. There was nothing that... There's no horror film that looks like It Follows. And it's the same with The Babadook, which is really stark and, you know, kind of a terrifying film because it focuses so much on its character. And the problems that are facing the characters. And it goes back to what you were saying about The Exorcist as well. I mean, one of the reasons why I think these horror films work so well is because their focus on character is so strong that you start to believe in those people and you want to see them pull through. And I think that's one of the issues that I have with a lot of remakes and a lot of modern horror films in general anyway. But, you know, that's just me.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, especially in the slasher genre now, I go there and I go watch a slasher film, it could be a remake, and I'm just picking out, me and my boyfriend play, who's going to die first? Who's going to die next? Because they might as well just have numbers stamped on the forehead. Characterization is so thin on the ground because it's just about gore and shock and scares, and you can't develop a deep connection with these characters because you don't give a shit about them. Because you want to see them die. You want them to die in horrible ways because they've given you absolutely no reason to care about them whatsoever. Mm. But it puts bums on seats and that's all they care about.
Well, you know, when these horror films and comedies, one of the reasons why they're hard to make, but one of the reasons why people want to always hit home with them is because they're so cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm guessing Poltergeist can't be any more than 20 million, and it's probably going to make its money back once it goes, you know, once it goes worldwide. I know it hasn't done too well, and I know there's been kind of reactions to it, especially involving the its remake, allegedly. There was a rumour, and I don't believe this in general, but there was something going around basically stating that what they were seeing from Poltergeist in terms of the marketing and the box office has made them very, very sniffy about what was going on.
But that's really strange because It is such a... I mean, I just finished the book It this week and I don't remember the original, like, miniseries or the made-for-TV movie very well. But it's kind of strange because it's like a totally different monster, isn't it, really? I mean, not the actual monster, but, you know, in terms of, like, the type of film they're trying to make. So that's really quite surprising to me. And I was really, who did he cast as the clown? Does anyone remember his name?
Will Porter.
I was really looking forward to, you know, seeing him take on Pennywise because the Tim Curry version is obviously, it's so iconic and it's so, from what I remember, just so messed up. And I was really looking forward to that. So I hope it hasn't been cancelled completely.
Well, I don't know. You never know with these things, but I find it so strange. But I think that's the problem with when horror film goes down the studio route. There's so many fingers in pies. And I think it's the same with Poltergeist. I mean, why would you make a? I still find it very strange. Why would you make a Poltergeist movie? I think the original's still so good. It's an effective film. It's one of those great my first horror film films to go and watch because it's just scary enough to, you know, that it might, you know, creep out the kids and everything else like that, but it's not scary enough that, you know, that will fully traumatize someone. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of Spielbergian tone in there as well. You know,
there was a rumor that he actually really directed it because it was like he was filming that. That was actually being filmed at the same time as E.T., but, like, he just basically got, like, Toby Hooper, who did Chainsaw Massacre, to come on, like, to kind of just, oh, you oversee everything, but there was kind of a lot of confusion, like, because he was on set quite a lot of time, or most of the time, like, is Spielberg actually really directing this? Can you actually look at it? You can actually see, this is what Spielberg really wanted, you know?
It does look like
a Spielberg film, like, from the get-go. It's like, if Spielberg made a straight up horror film, this is what it is, you know.
And I think that's one of the problems why I, you know, it's one of the reasons why I'm not particularly interested in going to watch Poltergeist, because the one thing about Spielberg, whether he or Hooper, you know, did the film or not, there is a tone there. There is something interesting about that tone. There's something very, very almost unique about that tone and how it presents the family and how, you know, how it presents TV as a necessary evil coming, you know, that came out around the same time as Videodrome and, you know, gave that sense of TV and the screens are evil. And we look at it now and people will complain about the fact that, you know, flat screen TVs don't have white noise. So what's the point? You know, I think, you know, we've grown up and we're a bit more cynical now, and I would really like to see, you know, I think our horrors have changed. Everything, you know, what we watch and we're more fearful in this day and age is just a little is a tad different. I mean, you know, it's great that Emma, you brought up the Babadook. I mean, one of the reasons why that's so good is, you know, it's ultimately telling a similar story about, you know, a loss of, you know, of this child and, you know, family bond and relationship and everything else like that. But it's a darker story. It's the idea that maybe this poor mother made a mistake with the kid and maybe doesn't want to have the kid anymore. And, you know, with something like Poltergeist, is there anything like that in here? Is there anything, you know, that dark? Does it even, you know?
They're struggling. They're like, they've got no money, but like, that's about it. You know, the father's just bought a house and looking for a job, and the wife goes, should I get a job? He's like, no, you said you wanted to write, so you go and do your book. It's like, well, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. you think, well, maybe you should for a year or so. But, yeah.
I think it's interesting what you were just saying, Liz, about how we're more cynical now and our horrors have changed. And I think I've spoken about this before. I think as you grow up and you grow older, what you find scary is different. Like, I would say before I had my son, being attacked in the street and being stabbed or something was like the scariest thing in the world to me. But now I don't worry so much about my own mortality. I worry about my son. Like, if something were to happen to him, like, things beyond my control, you know, if he was to get sick or he was to get knocked over by a car, and to lose my son and for me to have to carry on living, that is the scariest thing in the world to me. So when I was watching Babadook and I was watching this mother who seemed to be unable to love her son, that was scary to me on a different level. So, but like you said, the Babadook, there's so many levels to it, and this is just what you see is what you get. It's vanilla horror, and that's it.
And that's the worst kind of horror.
It really is.
Because it's like, because like, you kind of wish it was kind of just flat out just terrible, because that would engage some sort of reaction or engage something about it. But
yeah, and I think that's everything we need to say about that.
Yeah.
So next we are going to discuss Tomorrowland.
When I touched this pin, I saw this place. Someplace amazing. And it felt like anything was possible. And then it was gone.
What do you want?
I want you to take me to the place I saw when I touched this.
Where'd you get that?
I know that you were there.
Who are you, kid?
They followed you here.
Who?
John Francis Walker. You are now harboring a fugitive element. Release her to our custody. You have 1 minute to comply.
I really want to watch this.
I get the sense that I haven't seen it, but I kind of just feel like everything I need to know was in the trailer. Then that's it. Like, the trailer, does anyone else think the trailer was, like, really long? Like, stupidly long for a film?
Well, no, I think I've only seen the teaser. So, therefore, I'm still kind of left in the dark about what the film, you know, what the film will entail. And, you know, it's Brad Bird. It's an original film in terms of, you know, original product, not based on anything else, so I'm very, very interested to see.
Well, it's based on the Disney theme park, isn't it?
Oh, in Epcot. Yeah, this is Tomorrowland, isn't it? I think that's where the big golf ball is, you know, in the what you see.
Yeah,
that I think that's Tomorrowland. But this, I went to Disney many years ago now. So Chris, give us the lowdown on Tomorrowland.
Tomorrowland is basically set on the Disney, I'm not sure, is it a theme park ride or actual, like,
I think it's an area.
Yeah.
I believe there's a ride called, like, the Age of Tomorrow or something like that, but this is going back many years, so there might be an actual Tomorrowland ride now, but it's definitely an area there.
Because I do remember going, but it was back in 1995 or something, so my memory is sketchy at best, but for what I remember, well, basically from the film, it's essentially that the idea of, like, the 50s, like, America in the 50s, their idea of, like, future technology, when it's, like, kind of this kind of, like, idealist sort of everything shiny, chrome, these fantastical ideas brought to light, and essentially the plot follows Britt Robinson's character, who plays, like, a 16, 17-year-old girl whose father's working in NASA, and she has big dreams. She keeps asking questions like, well, how come everyone knows what's going wrong with the world, but no one's doing anything about it? And she finds this, basically, one day she gets arrested and for trying to sort of get into NASA. And then she finds this pendant on the way out of jail, and she touches it, and she, like, sees, like, there's this cornfields everywhere. She gets transported to a land, she's like, what the fuck? She freaks out, and so she tries to investigate more. She basically meets this girl who's actually a robot. I don't know if that's a spoiler or not, but over there she meets George Clooney, and then she learns about Tomorrowland, and the film is kind of, it reminded me very much of Spielberg in that kind of Brad Bird kind of Pixar kind of, I'm trying to find the best way to describe it, because it does have big dreams. It does have good vision, but it doesn't quite tie together as well. It kind of got mixed reviews, I've noticed, from a lot of people. A lot of people saying either they loved it, or a lot of people saying, oh, it's a big pile of crap. And I can kind of see arguments for both. I'm kind of in the middle. I kind of think it has the best intentions in the world, and it reaches for the stars. It doesn't quite get there, but you kind of, like, think, well, God bless you for trying. It's really nice to see George Clooney in a kind of big budget, kind of blockbuster type film. Because I was thinking, I don't think he's done that much, really. You know, apart from Ocean's 11 and things like that.
And Batman and Robin. Was it Batman and Robin?
That might be why he's not a big man.
Maybe.
That might be why. But it was really nice to see him. But yeah, it's been really nice performances. But it just didn't hang as well as I liked. It felt like it kind of was, it was getting too tied up with referencing to, like, things in Tomorrowland rather than get its point across, which was very much of a point of, like, well, let's stop being negative, let's stop being positive, let's get back to that idealised world where we start thinking about solutions, you know, rather than dwelling on the problems that are happening, you know. It's like, I think it's very much the whole theme of the film is, well, you know, the polar caps are melting, we're trashing the environment, but no one's doing fuck all about it. And so why don't we know these things, and why does it keep happening? It's that kind of, that it tackles that kind of issue, and I think it you know, God bless it for trying, but it doesn't quite get there. But there is a lot to like about it. The visuals are stunning in it. It has a lot of ideas. At times it's fun, but I think it just stumbles on the way.
Yeah, I think that's what I've been hearing a lot about it. I mean, I like the whole, the Tomorrowland's, like you said, like the 1950s version of what the future would be like, because I love all that kind of thing. Junior, like, I used to see these adverts on television, and it was like the world of tomorrow, and they were like from the 50s, and it was like, by 1970 we'll all have flying cars and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I love seeing that, and I did think, I mean, I've only seen the extended trailer, the visuals looked really good, and my boyfriend really wanted to see it, and I was like, there's just something about it that doesn't, it's just not getting my interest. But then again, I guess I'm not really its target audience. Is, I have to ask this out, is Hugh Laurie the villain?
Yeah, he is.
I knew it.
It has a few things that do niggle me. I mean, like, throughout the film, you have these kind of robots that turn up and they just start blasting like humans because they've seen too much. And they kind of, like, they're after like Britt Robertson, and they're after her robot friend, and they're after George Clooney. And then they get to Tomorrowland, and they're not even seen, heard of, mentioned again. And they meet Hugh Laurie, and Hugh Laurie's like, oh, yeah, you're from, like, oh, yeah, old friend, I exiled you before, but, well, let's show you a tour, and now fuck off, because I'm actually the bad guy. I'm actually not going to do anything about it. And it just felt like, hang on, so did you send those evil robots to kill them? In that case, why are you just... It just didn't hold tight. Like, what about the evil robots? What's going on here? It just little things like that, and it just felt like the script just needed like editing a little bit. I think if it was shorter, I think if it was just like just got to the crux of the story, you know, rather than kind of like maybe do a Disney tie-in to too many sort of to Tomorrowland itself, really, maybe. But you know, but. End of the day, it's entertaining enough. I mean, I wasn't bored throughout any of it. It just didn't hold together as much as it should have done, which is a shame.
I kind of get the impression that this is like, it's not going to make too much money. I mean, it's obviously going to make money because it's Disney, but I mean, when you think about what's coming out in the next couple of weeks, like Jurassic World and the Minions movie, because I mean, I get the sense it's aimed at children. I just don't. And I mean, obviously Minions and Jurassic World have got previous films to go on and that kind of thing, but it just doesn't seem like the kind of thing that's going to grab a lot of children's attention. Obviously, it's like, it's bright and it's flashy and that kind of thing, but I just...
Yeah, I think that's, you know, without sounding condescending, I think there's just too many cogs in the wheel to get a children's, like, attention span going. It's just going to be like, well, there's enough flashy things in it, but the heart, the story's not going to click with them. They're not going to, like...
It sounds like it falls into like this really weird place where it's too complex for kids, and it's not, there's not enough to hold an adult's attention. Because I mean, a really successful kids movie, I mean, and I'm talking because I've watched SpongeBob SquarePants movie 6 times in the last week, is that it needs to have something for both. I mean, because obviously kids will get into this, will watch the same thing over and over again. Freddy went through it with Wreck-It Ralph, and he's going through it with SpongeBob SquarePants, and he's just started with the DuckTales movie. So
I saw that when I was little.
That was the first film I ever saw on the pictures ever, was Treasure of the Lost Lamp.
I remember going to the pictures in Warren, seeing that for the first time.
If it doesn't hold your interest as an adult, then, I mean, that's when you get this crossover, the generational crossover. If you look at, like, the Pixar movies and stuff, I'll still put, like, Up on when I'm on my own, or Wall-E, things like that, because it's kind of, there's more to it, you know? But it just kind of sounds like this is...
Well... I think what it comes down to, and I think it just goes for whether you're a kid, whether you're an adult, if it's a good story that's told well, and there's nothing wrong with what this story is trying to achieve, but it's just, it just kind of just stumbles along the way. It kind of rambles at times rather than just flows like coherently, and that's its problem. It doesn't just sort of, it just rambles through certain parts, and at moments it's really good, and then it sort of stops and fumbles about going like, oh, well, what about this? Oh, blah, 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 blah. And then there's like a bit of action set piece, and you think, oh, okay, this is good. Oh, no, it fumbles again. I think that's where it's falling down. That's where it's going to lose its energy. If it was a bit smooth, if it was something along the key, like 90 minutes long, it would probably hold up better. And I think kids would, and adults would, take to it a lot more.
It doesn't seem like Disney have had much luck with kind of the live action films lately. I mean, if you think about like the last couple of Pirates of the Caribbean film, and they did John Carter as well. It's
well, the Pirates, Pirates have always done well.
Pirates 4 wasn't the worst one by any means, but it did definitely.
They did well at the box office, though, didn't they? Always
yeah,
well.
I don't know. It's just.
I agree in quality. Yeah, not
yeah,
so
in
much,
quality.
But,
that's
yeah.
what I mean. Sorry, but, I meant in quality. Yeah. Because obviously, Pirates, the first one was hugely successful, and then there was immediate drop in quality. But people will just keep going back. I mean,
yeah.
That's why people end up seeing all four Transformers films. Yeah. Because
well, it goes back to that remake thing. It's a brand. Once you establish a brand, you can market it. So
yeah.
So like, people will turn up to see Transformers. People will turn up to see Pirates because it's back to what they know. It's a familiar thing. It's like oh, we've seen that, and they just kind of watch. They watch Hangover 2 and 3 and. Four, if they make one, you know, they'll because it's just familiar ground. I like the first one. I'll like the second one. Oh, I like the second one. I'll see his third one. You know, it's that kind of. Well, that's my theory anyway. But
I just believe that we're all horrible liars when it comes to the idea of we want original product. We actually kind of want the same thing again and again and again constantly.
Well, I'm never really surprised. There's only so much amount of stories we can tell, you know.
I mean, even in branding and everything else like that.
Yeah.
There's only allegedly 7 stories that we can tell anyway. But when I've been the amount of times I've turned around and people bemoaning remakes and everything, and then they don't go and see, or they dislike anything that is quote unquote original or based on something.
Yeah, you think something different is like, oh, it's different. Why? It's a bit weird, wasn't it? What
yeah.
Yeah, but I completely get what you're saying. I mean, I personally, when it comes to that, I do think I'd much prefer. What's wrong with just ripping something off? It's like with Ghostbusters. Like, why do you have to call it Ghostbusters? Why can't you just rip Ghostbusters off? Just say, yeah, ripping Ghostbusters off, but we're making it with women instead. Oh, okay, fine. So then you're not actually tied to Ghostbusters. You can actually do your own thing. You're not trapped in that commodity, but you just go, yeah, we're just ripping off the idea. You know, because that's what everyone does anyway. So I just call it what it is. And in that case, you kind of free yourself up to do something else. You don't have to like, well, we have to have the same things in it because, you know, it ties you down somewhat.
It's one of the things that's Scott Mendelson, who's a blogger for Forbes, I think he is. He's, you know, one of the things he turned around and said, there's no point in this new Point Break remake is because it's already been remade completely by different movies, and one of them was Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
There's no real need for it. You can just take the original material and rearrange it and just, you know, add something different. I mean, there was a reason why High Concept went, you know, did so well in the 80s, because it was just Die Hard on a Die Hard on a Die Hard on a.
Yeah.
And you could do so many different things, and that's why you came up with Speed and everything else like that. It was just rearranging the materials. You know, getting back to the point, I mean, one of the things that we have, and I think we have an issue now, is something like Tomorrowland comes out and people are very skeptical about it. And I haven't seen it yet, so I can't really judge, but I'm really, really interested to see what happens. Yeah. why it's failed.
I think it's definitely worth watching. It's definitely worth taking the time to go and see it, even if it's just for like the visuals, which I think deserve to be on a bigger screen. But there's a lot of interesting stuff. It just doesn't all work, but I'd rather have that than something like mediocre like Poltergeist, you know what I mean? No, that plays it safe. I'd rather a film takes chances and fail rather than kind of just play it safe and just be like, yeah, alright, you know.
Mm. Definitely.
Next, we're going to be talking about Simon Pegg's new movie, Man Up.
You can do this.
Hi, I'm Nancy.
This year, you're going to put yourself out there.
Take chances.
Be more deviant.
Engage with life.
Hey, oh my God.
You shouldn't really think about reading this.
I would lend you my copy, but I need it for my date. It's how we're going to recognise each other.
Ooh, it's a setup.
It may always work.
I do think you should read it. It was an international bestseller.
So is the Da Vinci Code.
Oh, another excellent book.
Not an excellent book.
We are now arriving at London Waterloo.
Jessica! Blimey, I'm not that late, am I?
What are we doing in terms of saying hello?
Let's just go in. Oh, too soon for that. Nope. Mwah.
Hello there.
So, book,
check.
And blind date?
Check.
What are you waiting for?
I am waiting for you.
Good. So, you're a triathlete?
Mm-hmm. This has got to regularly carb up.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely want kids. I'm not, like, freaking out about it yet.
Why would you? You're 24.
Is this a romantic comedy? Because it's kind of marketed like one.
Yes.
But I kind of got the sense there's going to be maybe something more to it because it's Simon Pegg. And I expect more from Simon Pegg than just a romantic comedy. Does he deliver?
Yes, he does. Though I would say it's really Lake Bell's film.
Is it? Right.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was one of the weird things where I watched the film and he was the first credit that came up. And I was thinking... Really, I kind of got the gist that she was the lead in the film. And she is. She is the main character. It basically is a romantic comedy with a kind of a modern cynical twist to it. She plays someone like a 34-year-old who's like typical unlucky in love and now is kind of come cynical about it. She's like, oh, you know, I can't be bothered. Most of the time it just doesn't work. I'm kind of just, yeah, whatever. She's kind of smart. She's down of a geek culture kind of thing. She knows about Wall Street and Silence of the Lambs, and basically one day she's on a train, she meets Olivia Loverbond, I think it is, and she's off to meet a blind date. She's going to spot him by reading this book, which I don't know, something about positivity, some shit like that. I forget what, but she basically, they're going to meet by, because they're both going to be holding this book at 12 or something, and she leaves the book for her, because she was actually quite negative. She goes, oh, actually, no, I'm going to do something nice. I'll leave the book there for her and pick another book and the thing. And she, in an attempt to try and catch up with her, to give her the book back, she bumps into Simon Pegg, who is the blind date. And instead of saying, no, I'm not the blind date, I'm trying to give this book back, she kind of goes, okay, yes, I'm her. And then hilarity ensues. I actually quite like this film. It was quite enjoyable. One of the things I did like was it's kind of smart. It's saying it's 90 minutes, so it doesn't sort of drag like most comedies do. It knows to get in there and get the fuck out. Lake Bell is really, really good, doing like incredibly good English accent. She's American, and you would never even know. She did the film called In a World, which I don't know if anyone's seen, but if you
have. I haven't seen In a World. I have seen her in Black Rock, which is on Netflix.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed that. It was interesting little horror film there. So.
Yeah, she's really quite a good screen presence and kind of likable and kind of kooky without being irritating. The premise does lead to be a bit, oh, come on. But then I think it kind of carries itself away just by subtly. Like I mentioned, Silence of the Lambs, you think, oh, come on, no one would ever just go with it. You would say, sorry, I'm not the date. I'm not your blind date or whatever. But the way they subtly hinted the fact that he said like a reference, which the film's already established that she kind of got into it, that she kind of go, oh, I actually might like this guy. And it kind of, that kind of, you know, you got that, like, way your brain worked and kind of clicked and went along with it. And that's how you start a film. So, yeah, it's about a decent three-star romantic comedy, which, let's be honest, most romantic comedies are shit these days. Which I think this one will be a pretty decent one. You know, it's
I've just, I mean, what's the chemistry between the two like? I mean, Peg seems to be playing kind of Peg again.
Mm. Well, actually, he does get a lot of meat to it. He's not basically playing like, oh, I'm basically Shaun of the Dead. He is basically playing like a character. Like, his character is 40. He's just going through a divorce. He's got all these like kind of complication things happening. He's like he's got his own issues that he's being kept away, and that kind of pans out throughout the film. The chemistry between the two is actually quite good. They bounce off each other quite well throughout the film. It does sync up like well when they meet, they kind of go, oh well, they, you know, obviously they are going to end up together. It's about the journey there, so it's predictable in that sense. But then again, that's what romantic comedies are anyway. I mean, you kind of be like pissed off if they don't end up together, because you think, what's the fucking point in that? So
I have to say, like, I'm obviously not quite, I'm not a big fan of romantic comedies at all. My idea of hell is being forced to watch Dirty Dancing or Pretty Woman with my mother. But when 500 Days of Summer came out, I really enjoyed that because they didn't end up together. And it tells you right at the beginning, they're not going to end up together. I really like that. But my problem with that, when you said about the characterization of Lake Bell as like a little bit of a geek, my problem with like the Zooey Deschanel character in 500 Days of Summer is that she was so, like, it was so blatantly, you know, shoved down your throat. Like, she's different, she's kooky, she's weird. So is it not like that with Lake Bell?
No.
Is it just...
No, Lake Bell's a lot more smarter. She's a lot more, like, she looks a lot like actual someone you'd want to hang around with. She's, you know, Zooey Deschanel is always Zooey Deschanel and everything she's in. She's basically New Girl. She's like, I'm kooky, I'm a
manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah, she's
I want
a bit,
to punch her in the face. So
yeah,
hard.
She's. I mean, like, it's in the trailer anyway. But like, when like someone like mentions, like, she mentions like, oh, Da Vinci, like, she talks about, oh, it sold X amount of copies. So she said, oh yeah, so did Da Vinci Code, and so, oh, another great book. She's like, no, it really isn't. You know, except she's that kind of like, she's with it. She's cultured. She knows a shit kind of thing, but she has a little bit of a cynicism. She's flawed, but you know, there is a lot to like. It's actually quite well rounded in that respect. Rather than like the standard Catherine Hegel type shit you don't forget.
I like Simon Pegg seems to do quite a few of these films. If you think of, he was in How to Lose Friends and Alienate People, and there was Run Fat Boy Run.
Yeah.
And he's not, like, obviously he doesn't strike you as the atypical romantic leading man, kind of. I mean, usually it's, like, fucking Channing Tatum, isn't it, really? Or Ryan Gosling in this crap. So I am happy to see him in something different, because this is going to sound terrible when I say it, but he's almost more, like, attainable. Do you know what I mean? He's, like, a real
person.
Man. He's not, like, he's not, like, the others, the Zac Efrons and all that kind of thing. So
well,
it
plays him more honest with age as well. I mean, you know, they do make a big point that she's 34, he's 40, you know, and the girl he's literally supposed to meet up is meant to be like a 24-year-old, you know. So there is that kind of, they do play that kind of that age card where, like, hang on, you're having a midlife crisis, like 4-year-old trying to date like someone who's nearly half your age, and that bit, you know. You know, just coming straight out of divorce kind of thing. So it does play a lot with that, and it's that kind of maturity. It's like, well, it's not all just 20-somethings. You know, it does feel, like, more believable. It's a lot more like, well, these are characters who have histories, they have a past. You know, they have their own shit that they're trying to deal with. It's not just like, oh, I'm down on love. Oh, Mr. Fantastic, oh, he's going to ruin me or anything. It's not that kind of thing. So, yeah, and plus it's, 90 minutes? So it doesn't really... for the trappings, which is like overstaying your welcome, like trying to introduce too many characters, you know.
Yeah.
It's actually quite good. I was actually quite impressed with it.
Yeah, sounds like it's worth a watch, which is good. So the last film we're talking about this week is Dwayne Johnson's new disaster flick, San Andreas.
People need to know that the shaking is not over. We'll get hit again, and it's going to be a bigger monster.
Oh my God.
The earth will literally crack open. And you will feel it on the East Coast.
with you.
My brother keeps, every time I talk about San Andreas, he goes, what, GTA? So San Andreas is your typical disaster film. It's got Dwayne The Rock Johnson in, who is my personal hero.
God, I love The Rock, isn't
he? I adore The Rock.
He was my favourite wrestler when I was
He's
watching.
Still my favourite wrestler. Freddie, my son, has just started watching wrestling with me. And he's got three favourites. John Cena, obviously. The Big Show, for some bizarre reason. And The Rock. And he's never seen The Rock wrestle, but The Rock's one of his favourites. But I digress.
He is amazing, though. He's the best person you can take a stunner.
Yeah, so that's very true.
It was either that or Vince. Vince was always good at it.
He sold the stunner so well.
It was in the most overreacting way ever. He's awesome.
I swear Vince proper did a headstand once when he got stunned. He was literally on his head for a good second and then fell. The Rock plays a first responder in this it's got your human element, quite similar to 2012. He's just divorced and he's got a teenage daughter he can't connect with, and his wife's moved on with a new boyfriend and all that. And Paul Giamatti's in it as a seismologist, I believe I've said that right. Anyway, this big earthquake hits San Andreas and shit goes down and buildings fall over and there's more earthquakes and there's tsunamis and tidal waves, and all the way through it, The Rock, because I'm not going to call him Dwayne Johnson because that's not his name, is trying to save his daughter the whole way through. It is what it is, but I really enjoyed it. I just, everything that you expect, it's in the trailer, there's going to be shit exploding and it's got The Rock in it, and that's why I went to see it. So I was perfectly happy watching it. The special effects are really good. I didn't give a shit about The Rock's family. If they didn't, they weren't in it and it was just The Rock saving people for an hour and a half, I wouldn't have cared. I just wouldn't have cared. That didn't bother me. I really enjoyed it, but I do like my disaster films. Except when tidal waves come, I got a really hard fear of water. So when the tidal wave came, my eyes actually filled up because that did freak me out that badly.
So you're saying San Andreas made you cry?
It did, yeah. Essentially, it made me cry. Also, I cried the day after tomorrow when the tidal wave came. I can't watch Deep Impact because I cry when the tidal wave comes. But I do like disaster films, but they've all got bleeding tidal waves in, all of them. But I really enjoyed this, and it's probably going to make quite a bit of money. I was actually watching The Tooth Fairy this afternoon with The Rock in, which is, I think, one of, the first films he made after he started being a full-time actor. And you can really tell how his acting has improved. And you can also tell how much fucking muscle he's gained from The Tooth Fairy to now. He looks like a completely different person. It's so strange.
He bulked up a lot for Pain and Gain, though, didn't he?
Yeah, and I just don't think he's ever stopped. I follow him on Instagram and Facebook and stuff, and he's just constantly working out, and I'm like, Dwayne, lad, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, go back to bed, honestly, just give it a rest for one day, you'll be fine. But I really enjoyed this. I really, really enjoyed it. It was just really good to just sit there and just switch off my brain and just watch shit get blown up. That was it.
Get destroyed.
Shit got freaking flattened, man. I love it. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say this is a great film.
No.
For starters, it's completely stupid. And it's completely cliche-ridden. Every other cliche.
Yeah.
You think it's cliche number, 101. The assistant who dies, but he dies saving a girl in the nick of time. If he hadn't stopped and saved the girl, he probably wouldn't survive. But he saved the girl and died. It's literally oh no, he's running out of time, and tosses her into safety just as he falls to his death. But it's fun. It's just brainless. It's The Rock. He's a helicopter pilot. Oh, he's flying a plane. Oh, we can't land. All right, we'll parachute out. Right. And it's got Kylie in it, so what more do you want?
Yeah, I was a first. It's not, is it? No, it's not. No, it is. It's not.
Is that?
That was really quite strange, though.
And was she doing an American accent as well? I couldn't. She wasn't. I think so. She wasn't. she wasn't in it long enough for me to decide whether it was a good accent or not.
I think if you have to think about it, then it's probably not.
Yeah, well, maybe. But I was just too distracted by the fact that, is that Kylie? That's what I couldn't quite tell.
I think, like you said, it's every cliche in the book. But, and it's not a brilliant film, but it's just, it's solid. Do you know, it's a solid six, is what I would say.
Yeah.
It's, you know what you're getting. And, yeah, you've got, like, the whole thing with his family, like, it just, that reminded me so much of 2012. And the fact that him and his wife reconcile and her boyfriend, like, literally died, like, 20 minutes ago. And I'm like, you need to go fast, Dale.
To be fair, she wouldn't have known, that entire film, they have no idea that, what happens to him at all.
No, so see, she's like, she didn't even grieve for him or not. And she didn't think, maybe he's out there looking for me. No.
Well, none of that. She's like, well, it was like, you've left my daughter. Well, yeah. Fuck you. So
it's The Rock, you know what I mean? I'm sorry if you're listening to this, Mike, but I would leave you for The Rock if you looked at me twice. I'm sorry, but I would. I'm going to get so much shit when he hears this. It's okay, he keeps saying that he's going to marry Emma Stone and Rachel McAdams, so it's fine. I've accepted that.
Together?
He wishes he was that lucky.
If I had a girlfriend and if The Rock turned up and said, like, by the way, I'm totally fucking your missus, I'd be like, fair play. Absolutely fair enough. I'm not even that mad. I can't even blame her, to be honest with you.
You could argue with a little bit in the hopes that he rock bottoms you, because how cool would that be?
And then die! Really pitching.
Yeah, you probably,
yeah, but what a way to go, though.
Yeah. Just The Rock, that's your last image, The Rock standing over you, giving you the eyebrow.
Yeah.
Talking trashy. But calling you a jabroni, and you're just like, that's it now.
People's elbow, just like, bang. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what was missing from this, lack of people's elbows.
See, that's one thing I do like about Fast and Furious, when he does put a rock bottom in.
To save like, him as well, I geeked out to that. I was like...
I'm always a big fan when you see The Rock, because there's a good chance he will do a wrestling move in the film.
Why else would you hire him? Rock bottom him, don't care if it's not in the script.
Yeah, I almost want GR to just like come out, just literally come out now and go, rock bottom! Oh my god!
Oh my god, he's broken in half!
Somebody stop this, this is sick!
He's got a family.
I love that. Just overreactions all the time.
San Andreas. Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I
mean, there's not a lot to say about it other than that. Like, it's just stupid, but it's just fun. It's
yeah,
not a lot.
Mm. Definitely. I mean, if it's a proper popcorn film, isn't it? You know, you're not going to come out and be a better person for watching it or not. But sometimes you don't need that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just want to see The Rock.
And The Rock is a very reassuring guy. He's
very calming, isn't he? He's a nice presence on screen, calming.
Yes, he's like.
Because you know what, he could save you from a building that's collapsing on top of you because he's that bleeding big.
Yeah.
Like, I'm convinced that he's, like, Superman or something, and he could hold a building above me. So I find him reassuring. And he's a proper, like, action hero now, isn't he? He's you mean, the size of him and stuff. Mm. But I do think he's got the charisma, and his acting skill has improved and stuff. So I do. He's a legitimate actor in my eyes now. But
well,
obviously,
what wrestlers are, really. Yeah.
I know, but if you compare him to, like, say, John Cena in The Marine or... Triple H in, what the hell was it called? There's some shit on Netflix with him in.
Oh, I don't know.
Chaperone?
The Chaperone, that's it. And the big show's being a knucklehead and things like that. You compare The Rock to them.
Yeah.
And those performances. He's a legitimate actor now. And I wish him all the success in the world because I love him. And I'd be really sad if he suddenly started making really terrible films. I'd be really sad. But he won't, because he'll just be in Fast and Furious films for the rest of his life every 2 years.
Which as is go into me.
Fast and Furious Back to the Future, you know what I mean? Where he goes back and starts racing the original, like, first car ever and stuff like that. I have no problems with that. Just carry on.
In space.
Yeah, we were talking about this, weren't we? In space, on the moon. Mission to Mars. I'm just going to drive all the way there. On the new, like, intergalactic highway. Anyway, after that madness... That's all from us this week. I'd like to thank Leslie and Chris for joining me. And so thank you guys. It's been fun, even though we went totally off topic more than once.
It's
fun. So we should. It's a podcast.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. Bye.